Hello, and welcome to episode 86 of the Rocky Mountain Mason. My name is Ben Williams, your host, and today I'm going to share with you the life and times of a foremost Mason of our era, Thurman Pace, honorary past Grand Master of the Grand Encampment of the Knights Templar of the United States of America, and a very distinguished Mason indeed, whose Masonic resume would be too long to read here. Thurman was there, April 4th through 9th, when the division moved up the west bank of the Rhine to support the 101st and the 82nd Airborne Divisions at Delhoven and Hittdorf. They fought the SS directly, killing more than 700 of them, capturing over 800 prisoners of war. And happy Holy Week to the Christian listeners out there. It's Easter. At least in the Gregorian calendar. If you like the show, please consider becoming a patron. Check out our website, rockymountainmason.com. Click support the show. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. It makes a difference. We appreciate your support. Helps us get around to getting this thing done, to be fair. And I want to say, too, that thank you to all the brethren that I meet across this great nation who remind me to keep doing this. I do enjoy it. I just wish I had more time. But it is gratifying to know that you're out there listening. So thank you. You know who you are. I traveled fast for an evergreen, falling first here in between such disparate worlds the vast unseen causes. Aloft the wilderness of bone and flesh, this shadow of my emptiness pauses. Some went north and some fled west, seeking the path through bewilderedness where silence ceased. Some went west, but I went east. Thurman Cleveland Pace, Jr. After celebrating almost a centenary with his family and grandchildren hailing from six states, World War II veteran and honorary past Grand Master of the Grand Encampment of Knights Templar of the United States of America, Thurman Cleveland Pace, Jr., passed in the company of his loved ones on January 20th, just 3 days before his 100th birthday. They stumbled on Dachau. There'd been reports of a camp nearby, but nothing prepared them for what they saw. Thousands behind the fences, emaciated, hollow, eyes flashing in the sunlight, afraid to move too close to the fence. Too many times, guards had tossed prisoners' hats on the ground there, over the line, laughing when anyone who tried to retrieve them was torn apart by the machine guns. His unit comprised scouts, about 3,000 men in the 33rd Cavalry Reconnaissance Squadron in the 20th Armored Division. They couldn't stay long, maybe 6 hours. They had radioed the coordinates back to HQ to the 42nd Rainbow and 45th Thunderbird Infantry Divisions, who would somehow deal with it all. But they opened the gate. Arbeit macht frei, it said. Then off toward Munich. Forever after, the 20th Armored Division would be known as the Liberators. His father had served as an engineer in World War I. When their country needs them, he told his son, the Paces volunteer. They're not drafted, he said. So on December 7th, 1942, 1 year after Pearl Harbor, and a month before his 19th birthday, Thurman enlisted. He took the Army Special Assessment Test. They sent him to college, but in 1944, the program was cancelled. Like many others who'd enlisted and scored well on the test, he was assigned to the 33rd Cavalry Reconnaissance Squadron. They had moved fast, into the vacuum as the Nazis retreated across Europe. From Boston to Le Havre, 11 days aboard the USS Brazil in February of 1945. Thurman took as much time on deck as he could, face to the wind. Then deployed. Light armor, jeeps, half-tracks, churning fast through France, Belgium, and into Germany. They took up supporting positions attached to various divisions engaged in battle, armored and infantry, testing the front, treading new ground where the waves once broke. Always moving, sleeping in dugouts, mortars whistling overhead, punctured by the crack, boom, crack of the howitzers. Thurman was there when, April 4th through 9th, the division moved up the west bank of the Rhine to support the 101st and 82nd Airborne Divisions at Delhoven and Hittdorf. The 412th Armored Field Battalion received a Distinguished Unit Citation for that engagement. Then, the 20th crossed the Danube on April 28th and fought hard the next day, capturing the bridge over the Paar River at Schrobenhausen intact. "I have never seen a more aggressive armored unit," Lieutenant Colonel Donald E. Downard, commanding officer of the 2nd Battalion, 222nd Infantry in the 42nd Division, once said. They fought the SS directly, killing more than 700 of them, capturing over 800 prisoners of war as part of Task Force 20. They opened the hole. Munich would fall. For this victory, elements of the 20th were awarded another Distinguished Unit Citation, battle stars appearing through the fog of war. The ghosts of Dachau still haunted him, though, like the rubble of Aachen, wasted silhouettes backlit by raging fire. They pushed on toward Austria. Up here, in the Bavarian Alps, the sun lit up the sky. There was something close to peace when he etched his initials into Hitler's house at Berchtesgaden, as if to say, "I was here at the confluence of history." He'd smile in mischievous understatement when, almost 80 years later, he'd retell the story. They were almost upon Salzburg when the word came that Germany had surrendered. Back stateside, preparations began for deployment to the Pacific Theater. But the bomb ended all that. Thurman took the GI Bill to college at Auburn University to finish his degree in business administration. He married his wife of 73 years, Betty Annette Drake, in 1950, and left Alabama for a position at the American Sugar Company, later Anstar Corp., the owner of the Domino Sugar brand, eventually retiring in 1987 as assistant to the corporate treasurer, secretary of corporate capital additions, and president of U.S. Mutual Liability Insurance Company. He served his community as an elder in the Presbyterian Church and as a school superintendent. He entered the fraternity in 1959, raised in Lafayette Lodge 27 in Rahway, New Jersey, before demitting to Atlas Lodge 125 in Westfield, where Betty and he bought a home. They lived there until 2014. He was master of the lodge in 1991. On June 7th that year, when he was master, 32 past grandmasters showed up to Atlas Lodge, representing 24 jurisdictions, including China. They'd come to honor his year in the East. He befriended Harold B. Voorhis, a foremost Mason of the era, who became his mentor, and he entered the York Rite. He was knighted in Trinity Commandery No. 17 in Plainfield, New Jersey, in 1961, serving as commander 5 years later. In 1976, he was elected Grand Commander. In 1982, Grand Master of the Grand Encampment, Ned Dull, appointed him to serve as Department Commander for the Northeast Department. He was director of the I Foundation from 1998 until 2002. At the 63rd Triennial Conclave of the Grand Encampment, held in Houston in 2006, he was elected an honorary past Grand Master of the Grand Encampment. The Order of the Temple was probably his favorite degree. He knighted hundreds. Even into his late 90s, he could recite the commander's part almost word perfect. Despite his significant and widespread Masonic influence, you wouldn't find him at the dignitaries' table. He'd say something like, "I don't want to sit with you old folks. There are young masons to meet," and seek out a table with an entered apprentice or a young mason, someone he'd never seen before. He wanted to greet them, to listen to them, to inspire and empower them. "My goal in life was to help young people," he told the Right Stuff podcast a few years back. "It gives me a warm feeling in my heart," he said. With similar intent, he founded the Children's Dyslexia Centers in 1994. It became the major charity of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite for the Northern jurisdiction. His advice to new masons was to get active, to be involved. If you wanted to ascend through the ranks, you need to show up and be of use, he would say. He wouldn't tolerate nepotism. He held his friends to a higher standard. He wasn't afraid to remove them from office if they didn't perform. Something he had learned in Normandy, you needed the right man for the right job. Personal feelings had nothing to do with it. "You make your own way," he must have thought, as he curled up on the floor of a bakery somewhere in Europe after a long march. Near the ovens, where the bread rose, forever changed by a smattering of yeast, a metaphor for transformation could not be lost on him. "It was the warmest night I spent in the army," he said. Now, Thurman Pace's Masonic resume is impressive. There are many of us who just join basically everything because we're curious. And there are many of us who get involved, and once we finish being involved through a line somewhere, are tapped almost immediately for another leadership position in an appendant or adjoining body. Thurman was of the latter. His talents were so sought after that he was a member of almost every Masonic invitational only that you can possibly imagine. And while he didn't necessarily go through the officer's line, for which I actually respect him greatly, he was frequently given an honorary presiding officer status. His leadership is particularly notable in the Masonic Rosicrucians, the Societas Rosicruciana in Civitatibus Federatus, of which he served as Supreme Magus from 1998 to 2007. And he was instrumental in bringing the Rosicrucian Society to other countries. And as a result of this, he was an honorary Pars Supreme Magus of France and Romania. His Masonic resume is, again, probably too long to read here, and I really don't want to bore you, the listener, with, you know, a panoply of titles. But if you are a member of the Knights Templar, please check out his resume on the very last page of the spring issue of the Knight Templar magazine. I think you'll find it quite impressive. Well, since it is Easter, I thought I might leave you with this. As Logos, Christos is cosmos, and cosmos, as Christos, is eternity unveiling. Christos is cosmos, and cosmos is eternity unveiling. This is the place where the heart is wrought, hopeless, with passions railing, and the spirit thick with shadows countervailing the appearance of all that really is. You fabricated this. You made all that you think you see. This image is the wheel of your destiny. Here, now, where teeth gnash amid all this wailing, Christ comes invisibly to destroy the iniquity of your great illusion and restore you again at last to true dominion. Rise, great Son of Man, he who blesses it. Look within these avenues of sin. Here, pray that you see nothing. Into this void is birthed the greatest secret, the resplendent vision, which can only be given to one who already possesses it. Well, thank you for listening to this short Easter special. Wherever you are, I hope you're enjoying the return of light to the world. Remember that even if the year is mechanical, and even if religion be historical, surely the invisible supreme cause is yet made manifest everywhere. So how could the return of light not epitomize in every year the finality of one's own becoming? And until next time, take care and Godspeed.